Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org. Hey, road trippers, I've got a little pre-show preamble for some breaking news out of the Beverage Testing Institute. If you don't know them, well, you should. Since 1981, they've been testing and rating over 1,000 bottles of spirits, wine, and beer every year. So they've got a deep historic database with tasting notes online at tastings.com. It's a great tool for when you're in a liquor store and wondering, does this little bottle, does it taste as good as it looks? But anyway, the breaking news is this. For the first time in the Institute's more than four-decade history, they're releasing today their list of the top 25 spirits of the year. Now, I'm going to do an episode about this in the near future. And spoiler alert, part of that episode will be about my frustration that there are only two mezcals on this list, and neither one of them is number one. But for now, I just wanted to note the breaking news so that I didn't get scooped by my friend Chava over at Heritage Mezcal. Okay, if you want to check that list out, again, go to tastings.com. All right, Roy, now, please start the engines for another episode of Agave Road Trip. I'm Luke Bang.
And I'm Linda Sullivan.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Grand Gags bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico.
Vroom, vroom.
I've got a preachment, dear friends. You are about to receive on my well nicotine and the temptations of McGay.
Welcome to this very weird church.
There you go. Exactly. Which is what this episode is about. It's the Church of Our Lady of Tequila. So, Linda, I have heard all sorts of things in the world of agave spirits that are supposed to be sacred and treated with respect. But that, to me, that begs the question, what does it mean exactly to respect something? Or more importantly, what constitutes disrespect?
I think this is a very curious intersection of... I don't know if the right category is morality. I think there's some fuzziness between ethics and morality. And then I will even angle further and maybe include spirituality, because a lot of us get our morality from that angling, right? And to talk about any of those categories that are very precious and super near and dear to the very center of us, our soul, or where we're getting our spirituality or value system, to talk about that in the world of spirits is fairly unusual.
Is it unusual, though?
I mean,
like this is, you know, it's, to me, the fascinating intersection is exactly that word, spirit, right? And my understanding is when they first discovered distillation and they dropped a piece of meat in the first spirit, like, it didn't rot, and they thought somehow it was our connection to the spirit world.
Well, so we're talking, when we talk about agave spirits, we are primarily talking about culture, generational stories, oral storytelling even, and teaching that goes down right from often a parent to a child. And in my education, Mexican culture is braided really hard between the daily way that they live and rituals they keep in non-churchy or spiritual spaces, like their home, like their business. in a way different capacity than we live here in the United States of America. Think of our big separation of church and state. I don't think of the word separation when I think of how entangled some rituals and practices are in the, air quotes, regular life of spiritual people in Mexico.
Gosh, you know, like, this is not where I expected us to go, but now you've got me.
Already?
Yeah, already. But now you've got me thinking about something that sort of puts a new twist on how I was thinking about this episode, Linda. So, you know, Chava and I did an episode a while back about Pachuga. There was a post that we found online, and I'll link to that episode because it was a while ago on our webpage. I'll link to it. But there was a post online from somebody saying that was a chef in New York City, and he saw that there was Pachuga for sale at the bar in the restaurant where he worked, and he was offended by that. And he was offended by that because Pachuga to him from the, I believe, Oaxacan community from which he came, to him that was a very sacred thing.
Oh, I remember this episode.
Okay. Oh, really?
I think I do.
I barely do. But, you know, so like there was the whole conversation around, well, what does that mean? And, you know, without question, there are communities and families and people for whom Pachuga is sacred. They're making it for those sacred purposes and those celebrational purposes and those family purposes. But then clearly there's also Pachuga that's being made for commercial purposes, right?
Right.
So, and I'm getting back to what you said, I promise. Just give me a minute. Why are you looking so anxious?
A minute or three.
Okay, more 13. Like 6 minutes. That's fair. and that also then begs the question when people talk about, well, you know, the mezcal is sacred. Same thing. Some of it is made to be sold. Some of it is absolutely made with this sacred thing in mind. And agave is sacred. Well, okay, so now some agave is sacred. Some agave was literally planted, right? But then this brings me back to that daily ritual thing that you're talking about. And my head went to the nixtamalization of, my tongue didn't go there, to the nixtamalization of corn on a daily basis to make the masa, to make the tortillas. So, you know, you're somebody who actually has a background in religion. I'm somebody who got kicked out of religion. So, like, completely different perspectives,
oh,
right?
Oh, gosh, there's no way to make this episode contained in the time that you make these episodes. Okay, so there's, like, 15 things I want to say to that. Yes.
Wow!
Okay, so what you just said about the pechuga, though, is super interesting. And for the people who listen to this podcast, your gringo bartenders, this is super relevant because there's a whole thing going on with green chartreuse right now. Chartreuse is being made, it has always been made by monks.
Yeah.
And the demand went up during the pandemic. Alcohol was like one of very few industries that made tons of money, you know, when there was lots of struggle. And the monks essentially, this is a gross summary, but the monks essentially were like, yeah, we're not going to make any more than what we're making. Like, our pars are our pars, and that fits with our, you know, the lifestyle that we do, even though the demand was skyrocketing. So it's very likely, based on supply chain, that in the next, I don't know, X amount of years, we're going to have a pretty significant shortage of green chartreuse, and the price is probably going to go up, and it's probably not going to show in cocktails the way that it has. You know, my favorite cocktail, The Last Word, is probably not going to be on bar menus as you know, proliferously, not a word, I don't
know,
all over, it's not going to be around. Yeah. So
you know,
that's the same type of thing, like you were saying about
pechuga. You know how we could solve that, though?
I don't know, buy it all?
No. Just don't let anybody from Dark Matter Coffee drink chartreuse, and pretty soon you don't have the shortage anymore.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I know.
We love you, Dark Matter.
Okay, so that's interesting. So that for them, the sacredness was, no, it's just our practice.
It's not responding. They're kind of refusing to respond to the supply and demand, the economics of their product, because they are choosing, it seems to me, to keep sacred what it means to them and the production, either level of it, the process of it, the ritual of it, right?
Oh, that's really, it's fascinating to think about. To them, the sacred piece isn't the spirit, but the process of making the spirit.
Mm-hmm. And they're doing it to fulfill whatever, you know, this is kind of a, I don't know, detailed or emotionless way to say it, but it's checking a box for them that works for their spiritual relationship, their higher power, their, you know, meditative, ritualistic relationship and not to please anyone outside those walls.
Oh, I love that. Okay, so that was one of the 15 things.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Wait, bring me back. What were the other 14?
Tortillas.
Okay, well, the tortillas, this is a really beautiful one. Working, like, in the kitchen at Topolobampo, where I was for many years, you could see over the line was, like, sort of open to the restaurant. So when we would run food and pick up plates, you could see over, and there were typically a couple of folks in the back that would make tortillas by hand and heat them on the little comal. The most of the shift, everything made by hand, the nixtamalization happened in-house. It was really a beautiful process. You would see the little tortilla puff up. They would poke it by hand, flip it over, right? Like all with bare hands, not even using tools, right? And that comal is hot, 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 hot.
Yeah.
And they just knew exactly how to grab the edge of it, flip it over. So I enjoyed watching that process. Like, you know, when I was just getting my first table, it wasn't like rushing yet.
Yeah.
And coming from many, many years of having sort of meditative, but that vocabulary is a little Eastern, and that's more from my therapy world.
Yeah.
But in more of a Bible-driven, evangelical, dare I say, culty world from my past, that was a very prayerful process. To watch that, just
to watch it, not even participate.
No, not even participate. I mean, I maybe made a tortilla from hand once with great instruction, and probably also sucked. But just to watch her take the little, I mean, no, she didn't even need to measure it. She knew from the feel in her hand, every single tortilla was identical. But she would take the ball out, roll it, and she'd be having little bits of conversation in Spanish and English and Spanglish while she was doing it. There were things happening in fast forward. There was, you know, ceviche and stuff happening right over her left shoulder, dessert to the like out her left, you know, periphery, a full fire grill on her right side. Like there was stuff happening everywhere. And yet just like scoop, roll, smash, you know, press, unrelease the press, pull off the little paper onto the comal a certain amount of time, poke, flip. Put in the little box, put the box up, like, whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. Every time it was very, like, it felt like prayer. And I thought that was cool.
God, you know, so this, as you're talking about this as prayer, as meditation, as ritual, and then you talk about the monks making their green chartreuse, where it's, again, it's not the end product. That's the sacred thing. It's not, the tortilla is not sacred, the chartreuse isn't sacred, but you found that, and you know, I don't know if the I think you said a woman was making the tortillas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The one that I'm pulling to mind right now, but there were more than one.
Yeah, but did you ever have that conversation with her? Was it sacred to her, the process?
Oh, interesting. I don't think I ever brought up that point with that level of detail. I would use my limited Spanish. I do remember telling her that I thought it was beautiful, like watching her was beautiful because I could find the present tense words and conjugations in Spanish to say that while only looking like a little bit of a moron.
So, like a little bit of a moron. Hey.
I probably sound like a sixth grader using my Spanish, so I'm a little self-conscious about that.
That's okay. I don't use any Spanish, and even in English, I feel like a moron more than a little bit. But, you know, the way you're describing that actually reminds me of how I feel when I'm at, well, any of these palenques, but especially at Lalo's palenque, right, where he's got so much religion integrated into his process, where, you know, he'll plant that cross on top of his horno, his oven, after it's filled and, you know, when it's cooking, and he has the same, not as, that's a big cross, and then he's got the little crosses in each of his fermenters.
Yeah, I remember the little ones. That was one thing that stuck out to me after visiting his palenque, because his fermentation tanks are one of the first that I saw at getting into mezcal in person.
Yeah.
And does he ferment with bagasso?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So unusually, some people have especially when you ferment with bagasso, you have that thick layer on top.
Yeah.
So there's like a a solid there, and the little wooden crosses stick in like they're in quicksand or something. So I remember seeing those in there, and I was like, oh, interesting. Like, he went this intentional step to, like, sort of bless this part of the process and stick this cross. And, like, what is this? You know, it looks like a quicksand layer on top of the juice, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, you know, which, so to tie this into how you feel when you're watching this woman make the tortillas, like, for me, I was raised Jewish and I gave it up for Lent. I describe myself as an apathetic agnostic, right? Like, I don't know and I don't care. There's a great line in Nick Hornby's High Fidelity book that goes something like, you know, I don't believe in heaven, but I want to be the kind of person who would qualify to get in, you know?
Ooh, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, to me, that's like, that's sort of the ethos I want to carry. And so I'm not a religious person, but there's something that I find truly beautiful looking at these crosses and recognizing the meaning and the spirituality of that process for Lalo. And yet, you know, to your point, like, Lalo, oh man, I want to have this conversation with him. To your point, like, certainly the process is sacred for him, but he's selling his agave spirits, which he would call mezcal, but the government won't allow him to. He's selling that commercially.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the process itself is still so sacred to him and his fellow Palenqueros and his family.
Well, I think that almost opens up a whole nother black hole of curiosity for me, because the difference between the process and the end result seems, in my mind, to hold a whole nother set of parallels between the bar industry and the church world, the religion world, more hinging on the idea of hospitality.
Oh, so, yeah, but that's like a whole separate
episode.
I think.
Put a pin in that.
Yeah, because not even might be. Like, that's what we're recording in this vehicle next.
Oh, my gosh.
But
by vehicle, you mean studio.
Yes, I do. Okay. But mobile studio. You know, but I will say, to sort of tie all of this together, you know, there's also this concept related to what we're saying, right? Where some people will say, oh, you should never use mezcal to make a cocktail. It's too sacred. It's too important. And if you go back to what you're saying about process and how process can be sacred, you know, I think if you are acknowledging and respecting the ingredients, it's like you're not disrespecting the corn by nixtamalizing it. Right. And I wonder if you can't look at how I'm not a bartender. You are.
Like, sometimes.
Sometimes. I wonder if you can't look at that process of making a cocktail as, and not always. Sometimes it's just commercial. Sometimes you're just making the vodka soda. But sometimes you're trying to find the beauty in that ingredient in a way that reflects the spirituality of the process that we see so frequently in Mexico, maybe?
Yeah. No, I would agree with that. And I think it can be so subtly shifted. I think I'm a big fan of Priya Parker, who is more of like a social, I would call her kind of an ethnographist who like looks at community, looks at how we interact with one another. And she's very big on like intentionality,
yeah.
Right? You could crush a gin and tonic and mm-hmm. be like, oh, that was great. I'm like a little drunk now, right?
Right.
Or you could select a gin that you just learned about from South Africa that has this certain fynbos, you know, botanical that's only grown there. It's endemic to the region, blah, blah, blah. And this tonic that, you know, uses a, you know, level of quinine and this, you know, basil that is special, blah, blah, blah. Mix them together and be like, oh, that's a, you know, rockin' gin and tonic. And I really appreciate it. And I'm going to like close my eyes and savor every sip, blah, blah. Right. Same drink. It's a G&T.
Yeah.
You could really sink down in the moment and come to it with intention, or you could like crush three in a row and not really pay attention and then be kind of drunk. And maybe that was your goal, or maybe you weren't paying attention to what your goal was. So yes, I think that you could honor the journey that something went through and use it at the end, like respectfully, Or you could ignore the journey and, you know, take the shot and go to the next place with your friends. Or, you know, I'm not necessarily even angling towards like there's a right and a wrong way to do it. I really try to pull away from that dichotomy. But I think that if we come to something with intention, we come with a curious posture and we do try to savor that moment, whatever it is. If it's eating that taco that had the handmade tortilla. A taco takes, you know, 3 bites to eat. Again, that's gone really quickly.
Just 2 for me. I've got a very big mouth.
Just 2.
Yeah.
Wow. That's not, you better really savor those bites then.
Oh, that's really beautiful. I love what you just said as the conclusion.
All right, let's wrap with that.
Okay, I'll catch you next episode, Linda.
Hasta pronto.
Hey, that's my line.
You've been listening to Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Gringex bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico. We're blessed with sound engineering by Roy Sierra and a theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Marco Ricos. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, well, I'm sure you'll let us know that too. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Agave Road Trip. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pit Bulls, Inc. Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization using the power of educational storytelling about food to build a more equitable, resilient food system. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network might lead you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If you drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly, drive responsibly, eat responsibly too, and listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive. Do not walk either. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to stretch every 30 minutes. If you stretch every 30 minutes, please stay within your defined stressing capacity. And consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you don't have a doctor, maybe Dr. Ryan Acock, the Cocktail MD, can help you out. Thanks for listening. Agave Road Trip out.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.